going to look over the next few months at the life of Daniel through the book of Daniel. Daniel is a fascinating story. The first half of the book has some familiar stories, okay? We'll get to Daniel and the Lion's Den in a few weeks. I might even retell that story with the kids here. We've got the Shadrach, Meshach and Abednego getting hot in the fiery furnace. So we're going to get some familiar stories in the book of Daniel. The second half of the book, of the story of Daniel, is a bit prophetic. It points to the future. It points to what's coming. And at sometimes, I'll tell you now, it goes way out there, okay? If you know the story or not, I mean, if you don't, well, you'll just have to wait for it. It goes kind of like, what on earth is happening now, right? So there's a bit of everything. The story is that it's full of drama and adventure, but it's also full of culture wars and having the courage to stand against the tide of what culture is kind of pushing at us. So much of what Becca shared last week speaks into this kind of story and life and example of Daniel and how we're to apply that in our own kind of lives. Daniel is the name of the book. He's the central character of the book. Daniel means God is my judge, okay? That's what the name means. God is my judge. And essentially, that's his life motto, okay? It's a kind of God is my judge. That's kind of what it literally meant to Daniel. God is my judge. Culture is not my judge. The rulers of the day, they're not my judge, nor anything else. No one else gets to decide what is important for me and my life or the benchmark that my life will be judged by, but God, okay? So it's not about how much money have I got, therefore that determines whether I'm successful or not, or the clothes that you wear, the house that you live in, the appearance, how much hair you've got on your head. None of those things. None of those things mattered to Daniel. Those things didn't matter. All that mattered to him was God's opinion of him. God was his judge. That's his name and his life motto. And so let's have a look at this story. Castle, we're going to look at all of it. You'll be pleased to know we're not doing all of it today. We'd be here a very long time. But Daniel chapter 1 is where we start. Daniel chapter 1. It's on the screen. In the third year of the reign of Jehoiakim, king of Judah, Nebuchadnezzar, king of Babylon, came to Jerusalem and besieged it. And the Lord delivered Jehoiakim, king of Judah, into his hand, along with some of the articles from the temple of God. And then he carried off to the temple of his God in Babylonia and put in the treasure in the house of his God. Then the king ordered Ashpenaz, chief of his court officials, to bring into the king's service some of the Israelites from the royal family and the nobility, young men without any physical defect, handsome, showing aptitude for every kind of learning, well-informed, quick to understand, and qualified to serve in the king's palace. He was to teach them the language and the literature of the Babylonians. The king assigned them a daily amount of food and wine from the king's table, and they were to be trained for 3 years, and after that they were to enter the king's service. Among those that were chosen were some from Judah, Daniel, Hananiah, Mishael, Azariah. The chief official gave them new names, to Daniel, the name Belshazzar, to Hananiah, Shadrach, to Mishael, Meshach, and to Azariah, Abednego. But Daniel resolved not to defile himself with the royal food and wine, and he asked the chief official for permission not to defile himself in this way. Now God had caused the official to show favor and compassion to Daniel, but the official told Daniel, "I'm afraid of my lord, the king, who was assigned your food and drink. Why should he see you looking worse than the other young men your age? The king would then have my head because of you." Daniel said to the guard, whom the chief official had appointed over Daniel, Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah, "Please test your servants for 10 days. Give us nothing but vegetables to eat and water to drink. And then compare our appearance with that of the young men who eat the royal food, and treat your servants in accordance with what you see." So he agreed to this and tested them for 10 days. At the end of the 10 days, they looked healthier and better nourished than any of the young men who eat the royal food. So the guard took away their choice food and the wine that they were to drink and gave them vegetables instead. To these four young men, God gave knowledge and understanding of all kinds of literature and learning, and Daniel could understand visions and dreams of all kinds. At the end of the time set by the king to bring them into his service, the chief official presented them to Nebuchadnezzar. The king talked with them and found none equal to Daniel, Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah. So they entered the king's service. In every matter of wisdom and understanding about which the king questioned them, he found them 10 times better than all the magicians and enchanters in his whole kingdom. And Daniel remained there until the first year, the king of Cyrus. Okay. I recently heard at New Day that Babylon was described as Big Bad Babylon. Big Bad Babylon. Calling it Big Bad Babylon perhaps gives it a comical edge, but in one sense paints a very perfect picture. Babylon was the noisy, bullying, unpleasant nation of the day. You would not choose to go to Babylon on holiday, and you would certainly not want to see their enemies advancing over the hill to come to you. For the people of Jerusalem, it wasn't a monster coming over the hill, but much, much worse. It was the army of Babylon, Big Bad Babylon. When the army arrived in Jerusalem, they ransacked the nation. They stole the treasures. They stole things from the temple and took things back to their own temple. Okay, perhaps for us. Imagine the church being burgled and then all of the stuff being taken to a place of devil worship. How would you feel about that? You'd feel pretty sad, upset, angry, cross, mournful, everything, every bad emotion, every sad emotion. And that's essentially what happened to the things in the temple of Jerusalem. And then they didn't only take stuff with them back to Babylon, they took people back to Babylon. And they took some of the royal family back into Babylon. They took the young and the physically fit, the good-looking, the strong, and the well-fed, and the educated. People like me. No. They took the best people that they could find based upon what they looked like, based upon what they could tell about them. They took them back into Babylon to go and serve in the palaces of the king. And among them, as we read, was Daniel, Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah. So imagine young people, there's a few scattered around the room. Imagine young people from respected families with a relative wealth and opportunity of life set before them and them being taken and taken to a foreign land and taken not just to a foreign land, but to the big bad Babylon foreign land. They were taken. And then told that they were now to serve a foreign king. So Daniel, Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah are some of this group, taken from Jerusalem, where they had prospects and everything that they wanted. They were going to be the leaders and the rulers of that time, and they were going to look to God, and God is going to bless them. And they're now taken against their will to a bad place and kind of tried then to unlearn everything that they had learned, to try and rewire their brain and their thinking and their heart and their emotions to serve a bad king in a bad nation. So Daniel, Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah are some of this group. And their names are changed. Daniel's name is changed to Belshazzar, and the others to what are more familiar names perhaps to us, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. Their names were changed as the Babylonians wanted them to have Babylonian names. Their old names had significance as Jewish names. All of their names of Daniel, Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah pointed to the wonder of God. They pointed to God, of his wonder, his holiness, his beauty, his provision for them. And so the Babylonians gave them new names that pointed them to Babylonian gods. They kind of tried to change their identity by force, that they would now point to something that they didn't believe, something that was false. Now, how would you feel if somebody wanted to change your name? If somebody wanted to change your name, and worse, they wanted to give you a name that honoured a false god, I don't know how you'd feel about that. I'm not sure that I would like that very much. But that's essentially what they did. Now, what we read, it seems that Daniel and his friends seem to have accepted this change. Maybe they didn't like it, but they didn't kind of rebel against it, and they chose not to fight it. But then, interestingly, the Babylonian king also wanted to change their diet. He allocated them food and wine from his own table. But we read in Daniel 1, verse 8, Daniel resolved not to eat it. I don't want the food. I don't want the food off the table. I don't want the wine. I don't want it. It was too much for him to accept. It was too big a change, too big. He didn't want to do it. And so he says, no, I'm not doing it. I'm not doing it. Essentially, he's going, God is my judge. I'm Daniel. God is my judge. I don't want that food of which God has told me not to eat. Now, we've got to understand something here, because they're in a Jewish culture, because they're Jews. The Jews have rules about food, and he didn't want to break the rule that God had given him over the food and the drink that he was to have. He didn't want to offend his God and his judge just because the king told him to, because God was his judge, not this new king of Babylon. Now, for us, food is not the issue, is it? Food's not the issue. Some of you may choose to be vegetarian or vegan or to only eat this or that, and that's fine. That's up to you. We have that freedom to do that, don't we? So food for us isn't the issue. Our culture tells us, though, that we can and should be sometimes doing all sorts of things that we know that God says that we shouldn't. And so on those things, we've got to resolve to say, no, we've got to swim against the tide. We thought about this when we're looking at Romans, didn't we? Do not conform to the pattern of this world. Just because the world says that we can and we should do that, it doesn't mean that's okay. The world says you can and should do this, but if God says, no, I don't want you to do that, God is our judge, not the world, not the culture that goes with it. So for us, it's not food, but it's a whole bunch of other stuff. And so we need to resolve to live differently. Daniel had been taken against his will, plunked in a foreign country, a big bad Babylon, and he's going, no, I don't want to do it. Sometimes as God's people, we need to go, no, I don't want to do it. That's not how I want to live. That's not what I want for me. That's not what I want for my family. That's not what I want for my children. I'm not going to do it. We've got to resolve. We've got to go, no. Sometimes we might hear people from outside of the church telling the church that it needs to modernize or change the times so as to become more relevant in a modern world. But yet for the church, relevance in the world is not the goal. Relevance in the world is not what is most important to us. But rather, we need to know what we believe. We need to know why we believe it. And we need to live the way that God has for us, not culture. God wants me to live like this, and he is my judge. That's how I'm going to live. Culture can scream something opposite, and I'm not going to do it. I'm going to say no. I'm going to resolve to say no. We've got to draw a line in the sand. And where are you drawing your lines? Where are you putting your line? Where are you going, no, I'm not going to do that. I'm not going to watch that. I'm not going to eat that. I'm not going to drink that. I'm not going to do that. I'm not going to go there. I don't want to think about that. Where are you drawing your lines? Because Daniel's going, Daniel is my name and God is my judge. And so I'm going to draw my lines where God tells me to draw my lines. And they're not going to blur and they're not going to move. That's where I'm saying no. And he resolved to that. We need to go, it's not food for me. But maybe in our culture, it's our attitude to alcohol. The world says you can drink and be merry and it's how to have a good time. And we go, no, but God says don't drink to excess. There's my line. It might be our response to the LGBT debate. It might be our response to sexual ethics and the preserve of sex for heterosexual marriage. That culture screams at us, you can live like this and do this and do this. And we go, no, God says this and he is my judge. Here I draw my line. I'm saying no. What's our attitude to generosity? What's our attitude to the minorities, to race and to gender? What's our attitude to the use of our time? Do we lay our lives out before the Lord as a living sacrifice? And that's our line. Or do we bend and go with the will of the world? No, I'm not going to do that because I don't like it and it doesn't suit me and that's not any good for me. The Lord calls us to be generous, doesn't he? To be gracious, to be kind, to be hospitable, to be servant-hearted, to be generous with our time. Draw a line in the sand, resolve, stand firm. We're told in the New Testament to pick up your cross and say no. Jesus says, if you want to come after me, pick up your cross. That sounds like hard work, doesn't it? Sometimes it's going to be hard to go, no. I resolve to follow Jesus. I resolve to live for him. I resolve to live as God has asked me to do. Trust the Lord. Trust the Lord and not the culture. Trust the Lord and not the voice of your friends. Don't trust the loudest voice in your ear, but trust the Lord. For me, I remember, it feels a long time ago now, when I finished uni and I moved back home, I got a job and I reconnected with my old mates. We used to go down to pub most nights, not to drink a lot, but just drink regularly. And we toured around and did all the quiz nights. And then I came to a point in my life of thinking, this isn't really what I want to do with my life. This isn't really the pattern I want for my life. In doing that, I was missing stuff at church. I wasn't serving at church. What I was doing wasn't wrong in itself. There was nothing wrong in going to the pub and having a pint with your mates. There's nothing wrong in that. But it wasn't right either. Because it meant I was saying no to a whole bunch of other stuff that were better for me, better for God's people, better for what God had for me. And so I stopped. I stopped doing that, those things. I became the youngest person at the prayer meeting. I got involved in the youth at our church because they needed a leader that was younger and had time and energy and awareness of their culture. I simply decided and resolved to live differently. I resolved to do something with my life that had more value than what I had been doing. I said no to the world and yes to God. I resolved. No, I'm not doing that. Not fundamentally because it's wrong, but because God has better for me. I did sadly lose all those friends, which was hard. It wasn't what I wanted, but I wanted more to glorify God with my life than I wanted them to be my friends. I resolved that God was my judge. He would judge me for what I did with my time. He would judge me for what I did with my money and my talents. He would judge me, not anything or anybody else. God was going to be the leader of my life. And if that meant saying no to some things so as I could say yes to God, then that was what I was going to do. I was going to say no to the world. I was going to say no to what every other guy my age was doing. I was going to say no to the world. And I was going to say yes daily and frequently and often to Jesus. Daniel and his friends said no to the food from the king because they wanted to say yes to God. They denied themselves something so as to have a close walk with God. And at one level you go, well, if it's the food of the king, it's going to be nice. If it's the wine off the king's table, it's going to be tasty. That sounds like a good deal to me. If he's going to set apart some of that for me. But it wasn't what God wanted for him. And so he said no. Jesus tells in the New Testament, if we want to follow him, we need to pick up our cross and deny ourselves. Deny ourselves. That means sometimes we say no to things which at first glance seem good for us. Deny ourselves sport on a Sunday morning. Deny ourselves drinking to excess. Deny ourselves sex before marriage. Deny ourselves. I could go on and on and on, couldn't I? And there might be different things that touch or impact all of our lives, but I'm going to pick up my cross and I'm going to follow Jesus and I'm going to deny myself something. And what we're denying might be different for all of us, but we know what they are, don't we? We know what those things are. We've got to resolve. I'm going to resolve like Daniel did and go, no, no. We need to resolve to only date in Christians. Some of the youth at New Day went to a seminar about dating. I mean, I think it's great that was in the program. They were glad I didn't go with them. But they talked about, you know, don't flirt to convert. You know, God has us to be yoked with someone who shares our belief. So date, if you're a Christian and you're looking for a date, date another Christian. Don't you know the Christian? We need to resolve to make good use of our time. We need to resolve to read the Bible. We need to resolve to pray and to praying regularly. We need to resolve sometimes to commit to one church, to one body of the Lord's people, to commit that these are my brothers and sisters. These are the people that I'm going to worship with. These are the people that I'm going to serve with. Sometimes we need to resolve, yeah, I'm going to go and get baptized. And it's going to be hard. It's going to be a bit weird because everyone's going to look at me going down that big bath of water with all my clothes on. But I'm going to resolve to do it because the Lord has asked me to do it. And so therefore, I'm going to resolve and I'm going to obey. I'm going to resolve to serve. And it's going to be inconvenient and I'm going to miss out on things that I might otherwise have wanted to do. But I'm going to resolve to serve God's people. The man in charge of Daniel said to him, but you need to eat the food that everyone else eats or you will miss out and you will be worse off and you will look unhealthy. We hear this kind of thing all the time, don't we? It's not about food, but you need to sleep with her before you marry her because how will you know whether you're compatible? The amount of times that was said to me at university, I'd be a rich man if I had a pound. We hear all this stuff, don't we? You need to go to the pub on a Friday and drink until you're drunk because you've got to let your hair down every once in a while. How much do we hear this? We hear it a lot, don't we? You haven't got to go to church every Sunday. Have a Sunday off. They ask too much of you. No. Resolve. Resolve. You're going to be worse off if you don't do what everyone else is doing. You'll look worse off. You'll miss out on something. I remember being told when I was younger, as I said, that I need to sleep with girls or I'll be missing out. You need to smoke a spliff at least once or you'll miss out because it might be the best thing that you ever do. I've been told as a parent that my kids are missing out because we said no to Sunday sports and parties on a Sunday. I don't believe it. They told Daniel he'd be missing out. They told Daniel he'd be worse off. So Daniel said, prove it. Prove it. For 10 days, you give them all that food. For 10 days, give me only vegetables. They didn't eat the food of Babylon. At the end of the 10 days, they looked better than those that ate what was supposedly better. We need to change the idea. We've got to change this idea within the church so that we can begin to change this idea within our community. We need to change the idea that says, if you say no to the world, you will miss out. It's a wrong thinking. It's a wrong thinking. If we say no to Jesus, that's when we miss out. For Jesus came to give us life and life in all of its fullness. And so if that's true, and I 100% believe that it is, then if we're saying no to Jesus, we're to say yes to something in the world, we're going to miss out. We're going to miss out. That is the very definition of missing out, is saying no to Jesus. He has everything for us, for he is everything. He designed us and made us, knitted us together in our mother's womb. He loves us unconditionally and beautifully and radically. He desires by the power of his Holy Spirit to transform us. It's in him that everything is better, not in anything else. Not in anything else. Anything else. There's nothing else that you could do with your life or your time or surrender to or give into that will offer you anything near the happiness and the joy that is only found in Jesus. The opposite of missing out is not giving into the world. It's saying no to Jesus. Surrender your life, everything, every last single bit of your life to Jesus. There are things I've missed out on. There are things I've essentially caused my kids to miss out on. But I would do it all again. I'd do it all again for me and I would do it all again for them. For in missing out in the things of the world, we gain the things of the kingdom. We gain the things of the kingdom. The world can have what it wants, but give me Jesus. Give me Jesus in his kingdom. Research shows that Christians, and particularly those that are actively involved in their faith community, experience higher levels of happiness compared to non-Christians. I mean, it's obvious, isn't it? It's obvious, but we need to resolve. We need to resolve. For that statistic, that research done incidentally not by Christians but by the secular world shows us that, A, that there is something truthful and powerful and life-changing that brings a fruitful result in our lives by following Jesus, but don't miss the bit in the middle, particularly those that are actively involved in their faith community. Rocking up to church on a Sunday is a wonderful thing to do. Singing praise and glory to Jesus, hearing the Bible opened and that encouragement to surrender to Jesus is a wonderful thing. And it's I believe it's a blessing to you and to everybody else that's here. But there is more blessing to be had than just by doing that. Get actively involved in the life of God's people, because it's where higher levels of happiness are. What a wonderful thing, isn't it? God in his grace and his blessing has so much more for us. But we need to resolve. No, I'm not doing it. I'm not watching it. I'm not thinking about it. I'm not going there. I'm following only Jesus. God gave these guys unparalleled knowledge and wisdom. He gave them knowledge over dreams and a supernatural insight that shone above any of the influences of Babylon. God gives us out of his grace. He gave it to them and he gives it to us. But there is evidently something about God honoring the faithfulness of believers who make a stand and resolve to live for him. God honors and blesses abundantly those that seek to run against the tide of the culture. God blessed Daniel and these three friends abundantly, immeasurably. They stood out and shone with 10 times the wisdom and the knowledge of everybody else. They ate the vegetables. I think if I have my kids only vegetables to eat, there'd be a mutiny. But they ate the food that was supposedly worse, but they looked better for it. God blesses and honors our sold out devotion and faithfulness to him. We've got to resolve to run against the tide of the culture. But, and I'm nearly finished, here is the biggest thing. This is not a call to pull your socks up. Do not hear, we need to resolve, as in, oh man, as if my life is not busy enough. He's telling me I've got to go home and pull my socks up and try harder and dig in more. The call to resolve against the world can feel like an almighty challenge, can't it? Can feel like a huge challenge. And I think that's for everybody, at every stage of life, whether you're at school or college or work or retired, the call to resolve against the culture of the world can feel like an almighty challenge. But I do not want to challenge you. I don't want to challenge you. But I want to call you to come closer to Jesus. Come closer to Jesus, because it's in Jesus that we find the courage to resolve against the world. For Jesus has stood toe to toe with the evil one and won. And won. He stood toe to toe with the devil, the one who tempts us, and he won. We stand against the rapid rise of a secularist culture, not in our own strength, but in that of the Lord Almighty. What did we sing in that song? Yet not I, but through Christ in me. Yet not I, but through Christ in me. I do not resolve against the culture of the day because I cannot. But I, through Christ in me, resolve against the culture of the world. That makes a phenomenal amount of difference. I don't say no, but Christ in me says no. And so I say no. We need to lean and draw more on his strength, on his power. If you go home today thinking, oh, Steve was challenging today, then I have got it wrong and you have missed the point. It's not a challenge to pull your socks up and go, no! It's a challenge to surrender deeper into Jesus. Yet not I, but through Christ in me. If the call to resolve seems overwhelming, then come to Christ again. If the call to resolve seems so hard, so impossible, so overwhelming, how can I possibly say no to that? Then dare I say, and perhaps graciously and generously I might say, that maybe you've drifted a bit further away from Jesus than you see. Come back closer to Jesus. The only challenge is to your pride to say, I need more of Jesus. I need more of Jesus. Because resolving just seems too difficult right now. That's where the challenge is. Are we going to be humble enough to swallow our pride and go, I need more of Jesus. I need more of Jesus. Come to Jesus. Come to Jesus. Lean on him. Rest on his strength. enable him to help you to resolve to say no. I've already shared, Becca spoke so much about culture last week. It was wonderful leading to this. And then Johnson shared about, almost like he didn't say this word, but he resolved. Because what? Because my Redeemer lives. Because my Redeemer lives. We can resolve against the world because Jesus has already won. He's already won. We can resolve because the Spirit of God is within us. It's his strength that we say no, yet not I, but through Christ in me. Let me pray. And I'm going to pray, and then we're going to worship together. We're going to take communion, because we've got to do a lot of things. But actually, the most important thing that any of us, me included, can do right now is to say, I need more of Jesus. I need more of Jesus. God, you've shown me things today that I know I need to resolve in to say no. And that will be different for all of us. But maybe resolving to say no in that thing, whatever it is, feels mighty hard right now. The answer is not to summon up some strength within you, but it's to say, I need more of Jesus. I need more of Jesus. And actually, if today you don't sing another word and the communion passes you by, but you've heartfelt said to the Lord, I need more of you. I need more of you. And met the Lord in that place of vulnerability and humility, that'll be the best use of the next 15 minutes for you. I need more of you. Jesus, I need more of you. So that I can resolve, yet not I, but through Christ in me. Because you've already won. Let me pray. Father, I thank you. I thank you for this wonderful story of Daniel. I thank you that Daniel and his three friends could stand resolved against the culture, that they were not going to do it. They knew it wasn't right, and so they said no. They didn't cave in to the pressure. They didn't go, oh, that looks nice. I'm sure it will be okay. They just said no. And when the world mocked them and said, but you'll be weak and puny, you'll look worse off, you'll look pale compared to all the others, you'll be strong and well-fed. And prove it. In your spirit, in your strength, enabled them. That 10 days later, they were the ones looking strong. They were the ones looking healthy. They were the ones who had 10 times the knowledge and the power and the insight. Father, I pray that we would see the power of that example and that we would go no to the world. I'm not doing it. I'm not watching it. I'm not thinking about it. I'm not doing it. I'm not having it. It's not what God has for me, and he has the best for me. He has plans and dreams and a will and a way for my life that's opposite to that, so I'm going to say no. And I'm going to trust the Lord. And you're going to tell me that I'm going to miss out, but I don't care. I know I'm not missing out if I'm living in pursuit of God, living in the will of God for my life, for me and my relationships and my family. So, Father, I pray that we would lean on you. We would draw closer to you. We would seek more of you, that we may stand and resolve by saying, yet not I, but through Christ in me. I'm going to say no. I'm going to pass. And it's okay. For the Lord has better for me. The Lord has more for me. The Lord has grace for me. The Lord has blessing for me. I'm going to choose that. I'm going to choose Jesus. I'm going to choose the way of the cross. I'm going to choose the way of the Lord. So I'll say no. Lord, help us to find strength in you that we might resolve against the culture of the day. Help us to find strength in you that we do not conform to the pattern of this world, but we live all and all out for you. Father, I thank you that we have an opportunity and a capacity and a frame, a reference, a place to come and worship you. And that as we sing truth to you and in front of one another, that those words can encourage us to know you, encourage us to follow you, encourage us to draw strength in you. That as we come and take communion, as we eat and we drink and we give thanks and we remember the wonder of who you are and all that you've done, that we can draw a kind of supernatural spiritual strength from you. that as we feast upon you, as we remember all that you are and your sacrifice for us and the lengths that you went us to restore us to your family and to do that as a collective, Lord, I pray that in that we would find you again and resolve to say no to the world and yes to Jesus. Father, I thank you that you have more for us. I pray that we would resolve so as to live in the more. Amen. Amen.